Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. Articles of agreement to a truce have been signed aboard a U.S. vessel in the East Indies, bringing to an official end the Dutch-Indonesian hostilities. There's no let-up in the fighting in Palestine, with more overnight clashes reported. Here in the United States is quite a bundle of political news following Dewey's announcement of last night. And in Philadelphia, the Republicans planning their convention have run into a headache. Now, your announcer.
A care package requires a contribution of only $10 and contains 21 and a half pounds of food, 41,000 calories, carefully chosen to supplement obtainable foods so as to provide a balanced diet for a family of four for 1 month. Now, this big care package contains canned meat, chocolate, egg and milk powder, soap, and other essentials, and can be sent to any individual or group you choose in any one of 15 different European countries. Or if you don't personally know of anyone to whom you'd like the package sent, you may specify, for instance, a French war widow, and CARE will find that person for you. So get your contribution in the mail today to CARE, C-A-R-E, CARE, 20 Broad Street, New York. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
A truce has been signed in a war that almost got lost in the shuffle. A halt has been called to the hostilities between the Dutch and the Indonesians in the East Indies with the signing of a truce agreement early this morning aboard the U.S. transport the Renville, which is anchored off Batavia. As you'll recall, the fighting began last summer on three islands, Java, Sumatra, and Madeira, and after a period of intensive activity, died down to sporadic outbreaks which have continued. Now, lines have been drawn and agreed to which divide the Indies between the Dutch and the Indonesian governments. The truce, signed after 11 weeks of negotiations sponsored by the United Nations, also reestablishes trade between the two peoples. In India, Gandhi enters the fifth day of his fast. He is growing much weaker, and in the Indian capital, New Delhi, business and industry halt today as the people pray for Gandhi's life. There is a good deal of speculation this morning that a peace conference is about to be called between the political heads of India and Pakistan, although this is not confirmed by any official source. In another part of the world, in Jerusalem, according to broadcasts heard here in the newsroom by NBC monitors, there have been large-scale clashes overnight between Arabs and Jews in the Hebron Hills. In the United States, at Lake Success, it's reported United Nations experts will complete in another week the first draft of statutes which will serve as a constitution in Palestine under the plan for partition. There's more than a smattering of political news in the morning report. In Philadelphia, the Republicans have already run into trouble in planning their June national convention. There's a shortage of hotel rooms and a shortage of tickets for the convention. Most of the clamor at the moment is coming from the western states. Under long-standing custom, states within a 500-mile radius of the convention site receive more tickets than the distant localities. But the West says this system was devised when transportation was much slower, when people did not travel so freely over long distances. Convention Hall, scene of the meeting, seats 14,000, and there are already more ticket requests than that. New York's Governor Dewey is finally on the record as a presidential candidate, having come out overnight as a declared instead of an undeclared candidate for the Republican nomination. He'll bump headlong into Generals Eisenhower and MacArthur in the spring's first two presidential primaries, as well as Harold E. Stassen. Full slates of Dewey backers will be entered in the primaries in both New Hampshire and Wisconsin. In New Hampshire, the Dewey candidates for the role of delegate to the GOP convention will encounter slates backing Eisenhower and Harold E. Stassen. That will be in March. The following month, in April in Wisconsin, the Dewey slate will run into a contest with MacArthur and Stassen. A capsule review of the Dewey candidacy recalls that he has been busily seeking the Republican nomination since last summer. But his overnight open declaration did come as something of a surprise to many rather close observers who had not expected Dewey to come out flat-footed for the nomination, at least not for some time. They look on the move as a shift in strategy, prompted by a developing belief that Dewey would have to get out in the open if he were to head off Eisenhower and the openly declared candidates, Stassen, Taft, and Warren of California. They were making too much progress. The Dewey advisors are said to regard Eisenhower as the main obstacle in the New York governor's path. And the test of strength in New Hampshire and Wisconsin will not only be interesting to watch, It's predicted the battle will be a hot one. Stassen has had nothing to say about the Dewey announcement, and neither has Warren of California. Taft said he approves of competition. The more candidates, the better. In Chicago, another candidate, Henry Wallace, will make what is called a major campaign speech today at the Convention of the Progressive Citizens of America. Speaking of presidential candidates brings us to an appropriate moment for a visit to the nation's capital for our first direct report of the morning, that of Arthur Barrio in Washington.
This morning, the congressman from North Carolina is predicting a sad fate for the tax reduction bill drawn up by the congressman from Minnesota. The Southern veteran, Representative Dalton, thinks Mr. Knutson's tax bill will run smack into a presidential veto and that Congress will uphold the president. Now, Dalton is regarded around here as a tax authority. So when he says the $5.6 billion tax reduction measure needs changing, a lot of the boys are inclined to think that possibly he's got something. At the same time, Dalton's not convinced that President Truman's right either. That isn't his plan to give individual taxpayers a $40 reduction and to make up the loss by hitting corporation profits. But, says Dalton, when you put the president's plan alongside the Knutson proposal, you have a choice of two evils. Treasury Secretary Snyder has already given out broad hints that President Truman will turn down the Knutson proposition. But the Minnesota Republican refuses to be discouraged. He thinks he can rally enough of the GOP and Democrats to push it through. Another subject causing a rise in congressional blood pressure is rent control. The present law dies February 29th. So between now and then, Congress has to decide whether rent controls will be continued, and if so, in what form and for how long. The Alabama Democrat Senator Sparkman has tossed in a bill which would add teeth to the law and extend control through April 30th, 1949. Another Democratic senator, Myers of Pennsylvania, says he'll wage an uphill fight to strengthen these controls along the lines suggested by the president. At the moment, the consensus seems to be that controls will be continued, but that there's little chance for a stronger law. Otherwise, this morning, the Veterans Administration wants the American Medical Association to go after any doctors who've been chiseling war vets. And the vets enter the news another way. The government would like to prosecute any builders who aren't giving them their money's worth in the home construction program. Congress will be asked to put up the money for the prosecution drive. This is Arthur Barrio in Washington.
We've been talking a good deal lately about the communist threat in Germany. Today, we've an on-the-spot report from Ed Hocker in Berlin.
Berlin is white today under a new snowfall, and attention is divided between, one, what's going to happen at the Allied Control Council meeting on Tuesday, whether Sokolovsky, the Russian military governor, plans another blast at the Western powers because of our new bizonal administration, whether Sokolovsky will have anything to say on the joint occupation of Berlin, and two, strike news from the industrial Ruhr. On the latter, Ruhr strikes, the situation is confused, principally because it's Saturday. Figures on the number of strikers today vary from exactly none at all to a high of about 150,000. But the question remains very unclear. Are they really strikers, that is, or just part of the normal weekly layoff? And the latter assumption seems based on the best reports. Whatever the situation, the strikes have set off still another editorial slugfest in the daily newspapers, with everyone blaming everyone else. Much prominence is being given one statement issued by General Clay, in which he expresses much concern over the possibility of a general strike. Any such action, he warns pointedly, can only upset even more the already inadequate distribution system. The distribution system, as well as the collection of food, it must be remembered, is the responsibility of Germans. So far, they haven't made it work too well, and the result is hunger, lack of food, which is itself the root of a lot of evil in Germany today. This is Ed Hocker in Berlin.
And now to England to hear from Merrill Muller in London.
Going into a cold and wet weekend, all Britain today look forward to the next 7 days as providing a beacon light for their way of life in the immediate future. Parliament reassembles next Tuesday, and in the traditional way, a number of domestic British governmental secrets will start tumbling forth from the mouths of the various ministers. The new parliamentary session will provide many major events, some already expected, like the nationalization of the gas, electric, and steel industries. But certainly its highlight, and one of its guiding principles over the months to come, will be expounded in the opening week, probably on January 22nd, by Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin. This will be Britain's new foreign policy, resulting from the failure of the big four Council of Foreign Ministers here in London last month. The pundits predict great changes, a wide swing over to rightist theories in order to settle any doubts in the minds of the American Congress now debating the Marshall Aid Plan. But my talks with Mr. Bevan and his aides lead me to discount these reports as exaggerations. Bevan certainly has a new policy, if anything, a more independent British policy. The first week of Parliament will also open with its smaller but no less important issues. One being the threat of socialist rebels to campaign for the reduction in royal family allowances in general. Another will be the renewed battle for foreign exchange for overseas holidays and basic petrol for motorists. And there is even the humorous side. One MP wants the president of the Board of Trade to advise women shoppers that some types of British nylon is transparent when photographed. This man feels women buying such nylon clothes should be warned. This is Merrill Muller in London.
British women and children are being removed from Canton today following the Chinese riots in which several Britons were injured and during which the British consulate was burned. The women and children are being flown to Hong Kong. Meanwhile, Dr. T.V. Sung, who is the governor of the province in which Canton is located, said the Chinese government was responsible for foreign lives and would take immediate action to stop the riots, which he said had been started by communist agitators. American missionaries in the central part of China are having their own difficulties, meanwhile, in getting out ahead of the advancing communist troops. In the United States, the threat of another railroad strike is on the record this morning. Three operating brotherhoods say their members will walk out February 6th unless there's a 30% wage rise and changes in 44 working rules. A member of the government's mediation board is advising President Truman that efforts to mediate the difficulty have broken down and that an emergency exists. News about the export of fuel oil comes from Massachusetts Republican Congressman John Heselton, who says he has checked up on official figures for the export of the oil and that the first quarter of this year will see 600,000 more barrels of fuel oil sent abroad than was sent during the same period a year ago. He called attention to the situation, to quote him, in view of the widely known shortage in this country. And Nebraska Senator Wherry says the administration failed to take proper precautions which would have prevented the current shortages in heating oil because, says Wherry, it's the administration's plan to reestablish rationing. We'll have more news in just a moment. Meantime, your announcer.
26 million children will grow up without the proper education. Your children may be studying in overcrowded classrooms, in run-down buildings, and doing without paper and textbooks. Their teachers may be poorly trained substitutes who have taken the places of the hundreds of thousands of teachers who have left their profession. For teaching in our country has been allowed to become a job which is underpaid and carried on in the face of the greatest obstacles. One reason for all this is the simple fact that only 1 5/10% of our national income is allotted to education, as against 3% in Britain. Another reason is your indifference to what's going on. So get over to your child's school and check on conditions right away. And if something does need doing, join one of your local community groups and help to see that it gets done. For the sake of the future of all of our children, and for the sake of the future of our country. Our children will one day inherit this country. Now back to the newsroom.
Off the Florida coast, the 125-foot motor ship, Six Shillings, is in bad shape as a result of stormy seas. The storms at sea have given even the big ships a rough time. The Queen Mary docked overnight, 37 hours late, and the skipper said it was his roughest crossing. Memphis, Tennessee, has been hit by the second greatest snowstorm in its history, and it was still snowing early today. Here's an item from the What'll It Be Next department. Seems a chewing gum manufacturer who knows a good thing when he sees it has developed bubble gum that will enable the small fry to blow bubbles in color. There are three primary colors for the gum, red, yellow, and blue. And if the youngsters want something else, they can chew more than one piece at a time and blend the hues to their heart's desire. That's the story, folks. This is John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.